digital agency owners, web designers, content enthusiasts, fellow copywriters, and my mum. You are very welcome to this episode of the Content Goodies podcast, sponsored by The Content Lab, with me, your host, Abby Wood. Let's talk content. Today, I am joined by the wonderful Miss Mia Vance. Hello, Mia. Lovely to see you.
Good to see you. Happy to be here.
Good, good. So the wonderful Mia is our in-house editor at the Content Lab. So we're coming at it with a little bit of a different approach today. Rather than focusing on the writing and the researching and all that stuff, we're going to be having a look at editing and proofreading and getting to know Mia a little bit better. Mia, lovely to see you.
Good to see you. I like your hair today. You're looking very fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you. I didn't even pay her to say that, guys. She's just that nice. Wonderful. Well, we will just dive straight in. How did you get into editing, copywriting and websites and blogs and all that kind of stuff?
Good question. So I actually started in literary studies. I started as a creative writer. I went to undergrad for English literature and creative writing back in the States before I moved to Ireland, which was why I moved here in 2022, I want to say. And I came here to get my master's in creative writing with a focus in poetry. So lots of reading old texts, lots of deep reading and close reading, lots of analyzing, and then also a lot of creative writing on the side and kind of using the tools that you learn in analysis to write your own work and kind of join the conversation. But, you know, it's difficult to make a living as a poet or as a theorist for that matter. So I knew that after graduating with my master's, I would need to find a kind of writing adjacent or a theory adjacent job to pay the bills. So I knew that I would be looking for something in, say, publishing or editing or something like that. And so when the Content Lab posted a job listing for a copy editor, it felt like fate. I was just starting my job search. I think I had two applications out. And this was lucky number three. And when I got the job, it was like winning the jackpot, truly a dream, because it kind of uses both the creative side of the brain and the analytical side of the brain. So it feels like bringing all of those skills together. And, you know, who doesn't love to get paid to use the skills that they've, you know, kind of built? And who doesn't love to get paid to do what they love? So it really is the dream.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's not an often promoted kind of route for the old career, is especially in a digital agency. I think, you know, kind of it's often overlooked, you know, kind of being a full-time editor and proofreader and stuff. But yeah, it's nice to be able to balance kind of what we studied and also, you know, kind of stuff in the news and most pertinent to what's going on right now. So yeah, that's really good. Okay. And for those of us listening, what is the difference between editing and proofreading? Is there a difference?
That is a great question, and I love that you asked it. There is a difference between proofreading and copy editing. And a lot of people don't know that, and the terms are kind of used interchangeably, and that's okay. But there is a difference. So proofreading is kind of just looking, I'll kind of describe it this way. Proofreading is a kind of way of looking at the words, and copy editing or content editing is looking kind of through the words. And I'll kind of explain. So when you're proofreading, you're looking at things like misspellings. Does that word look right? Is that comma in the right place? Is that capitalized or should it be capitalized? These sorts of things. They're the kind of small nitty-gritty details in the text that you're looking for. And if you're only proofreading, not a lot of content will change. It's these kind of minor details that you're looking for. Whereas in content editing or copy editing or editing in general, you're looking more at the content, at not just how it's laid out on the page, but what it's trying to say, and is it saying what it's trying to say as effectively as it can. So in that stage of the editing process, you will tend to see larger changes. You'll see sentences move around, you'll see phrases move around, words moving around or exchanging. You'll see rephrases, and sometimes complete reorganizations of a piece will happen in that stage of the editing process. Whereas proofreading, you could do at the beginning and again at the end, or just save it for the end. It's just for the kind of, the final details at the end of the process.
Perfect. Yes. Wonderful. Okay. And for those of us who aren't familiar with an editor and what exactly they do, what does your average working day look like?
Good question. So let's see. I start the day with a lovely cup of coffee, like everyone else. I'm only human. When we log in, I kind of check to see if there are any tasks that are ready to be edited. I'll organize those for the day in order of, priority, deadlines, and things like that. If I need access to any documents, I'll get that. Or if I have any questions about the pieces, I'll check in with the writers and get any additional information that I might need. And then I will crack into the piece. I'll check the word count to make sure it's on target first, and to kind of estimate how long the piece will take me to edit. I will check the meta details to make sure they're the right length. I'll take a look at the keywords, and I'll keep our kind of keyword editor open off to the side so that any changes I make, I try to make sure that they're not going to affect our SEO ranking or anything like that. And then I'll give the piece a read. And as I do, I am looking out for kind of both proofreading things and content editing things at the same time. So I'm looking out for punctuation, spelling, grammar, kind of all the technical stuff. But then I'm also kind of reading for tone, reading like, is this how a human would speak to another human? Give or take. We all kind of, our writing voices are slightly different from our speaking voices, but like as much as we can get away with, does this sound like I could say it on the podcast or something like that? And people wouldn't be like, what? Why do you sound like that? So reading for tone, reading for, the kind of technical accuracy and things like that. I'm checking that if there are any links in the text, do they work? Do they go where they're supposed to go? Is all of the formatting consistent? Everything that's supposed to be this type of heading, like an H2, are they all H2 or have some of them changed? Things like that. Mm-hmm. And then I might give it one more quick read through to make sure everything's flowing smoothly. And then I will clock the time, send it back to the writer with a nice note of encouragement. Usually I like to say like, fab job on this as always, or I really like what you did with the voice here, or something like that. Or if there was something that I kind of stepped in and made some larger changes about, I might tell them like, hey, I reorganized this part of the blog, say, for example. Take a look and see what you think, because ultimately it is the writer's kind of final decision of whether or not they're going to accept the edits I've suggested. Mm-hmm. Because I never, I never assume that I know better than the writer. It is the writer's piece at the end of the day. So I might say something like that and send it back to the writer, and then it's on to the next piece.
Wonderful. I really like whenever I've taken a look at your editing suggestions and stuff, I really like how you explain why you've changed things and the reasoning behind each of the decisions. I think that for a lot of writers, kind of having your work edited by somebody else can be quite daunting. And although, kind of we have a fabulous team at the Content Lab, and they're all very professional, kind of for professional writers, you take edits on board, you take changes on board, but it's always really good to know why things have been changed so that you can make your writing better going forward. How do you find working with a team of creatives?
Oh gosh, I mean, it's It's a dream. I love working at the team here because not only are they all incredible writers, they have such skill and such talent that their work is a joy to work with, but they're also just such good people. And I feel like it's so lucky to have both, where you could have someone who's incredibly good at what they do and not very pleasant to talk to, or you could have someone that you adore, but who, you know, can't put two words together on the page to save their lives. And here at the Content Lab, we really do have both. It's just such a solid team. Everyone is so kind and supportive of each other, and they have incredible talent to back it all up and an incredible work ethic to get it all done on time. And nobody ever lets anybody else fall behind. You know, if there's ever a tight deadline, we always have each other's backs. So I've worked with, you know, in my creative writing studies and things like that, I've been a part of different writing groups, and it sort of seems like there's always, you know, that one person that everybody's kind of like, ah, you know, and you are here too. But I truly feel like this is such a well put together team. And I feel like it's a credit to how you've built the company culture as well. Like, you have managed to find so many good people that don't just work well on their own, but work well as a team. And that's hard to do, I would imagine. And I don't know how you've done it, but you've got some kind of magic that just pulls everybody together. And it's just so great to work on a team like this.
Thank you. Thank you. So for our lovely listeners out there, a lot of our listeners would be web designers, digital agency owners. They don't have the luxury of an in-house editor. They might be doing a lot of the copywriting still themselves. Do you have any top tips for editing a piece of work, especially when it comes to client-provided text, which seems to be the bane of many an agency owner's existence?
Good question. I do have a few tips, I would say. Like, one thing that I would recommend is, if you're self-editing, if you can afford it, take a little break between writing and editing. It can be difficult to self-edit, but if you don't have the luxury of having somebody else who can do this for you, you can do it yourself. It just takes a little extra work. You do have to separate yourself from it, because as humans, we have this amazing ability to fill in our own blanks, especially when we've written something ourselves. We know what we were trying to say. So even if it isn't quite right, we get it because we wrote it. And we're really good at just going, oh yeah, like, you know, we will honestly skip over some of our own errors just because we're so good at filling in those blanks. We almost can't see them. But if you take a bit of time, it can be like a palate cleanser, and it's easier to kind of spot, you know, an error, for example, or, you know, to be able to see, oh, that doesn't quite make as much sense as I thought it did at the time. And you can kind of then make that change. Whereas if you immediately self-edit, you might miss more. Another thing that I would say, and I know this is a common piece of advice, is honestly to read it out loud. Mm. And if you work in an office, that might be a little bit silly. Luckily, I work at home, so I can read out loud as much as I like. But even if it's just very quietly, like under your breath, you know, like you're just kind of reading it to yourself, you can catch a lot that way of awkward phrasing or accidental repetition, which can happen a lot, especially if you write in bursts. So if you read out loud to yourself, you can catch a lot. I used to read all my old academic papers back to myself, and I caught a lot of really embarrassing errors that way. So take a break if you can. Read out loud, even just very quietly to yourself. What else? There are self-editing tools out there that can help you, but these are kind of wavering in their accuracy these days. I know we use or have used Grammarly in the past, and the Hemingway editor as well. And mm-hmm. those can be good at showing you some of the things that you might not have noticed. But I would take all suggestions from these editors with a pinch of salt. That's where you can kind of go, oh, I didn't notice that, you know, that quotation mark is curly and that one is straight. But it's up to you to decide whether you want the curly ones or the straight ones. You don't have to just take whatever the tool tells you to do. Hemingway is great for showing you when your sentences have gotten too long or too complex if you've got too many adverbs. But again, depending on the tone of the piece that you're writing, like sometimes more description is nice and helps kind of keep that conversational flow. So again, take that with a pinch of salt. I would say usually Hemingway is right about the long, complex sentences. That's what it's great for. But otherwise, use your judgment there. I think those are the main three tips, I would say. Doing those three things, you should catch most of the errors, at least, and you'll get a lot of the flow smoothed out by doing those things and bring the readability up. So those would be, I think, my top three self-editing tips.
There we go. Fantastic. Thank you. Yeah, we've used Grammarly for many, many years. We have a love-hate relationship with the software. I think you'll agree. Just kind of as software updates, they try new algorithms, they try out new ways of processing information. And it's been a bit up and down with Grammarly lately, but I think it's still kind of a gold standard in the industry. You know, many agencies still use it. You know, it's great as a, you know, a general spell check and a grammar checker. But take it with a pinch of salt, like the lovely Mia says. It's not perfect. It's not perfect. Okay, so I know you don't get to do much writing, but I know that you, well, in work, should I say, but you are quite prolific poetess outside of work. How do you find creativity?
It's not always easy. I think most creative writers, even when they can be creative writers full time, would agree that it's not always easy to feel inspired or to feel creative. Sometimes it feels like there's hardly any creativity at all. And other times it's like trying to drink from a fire hose, you know, mm-hmm. It's almost overwhelming. But I find that the two things that help me the most when I'm feeling a little dry or stuck is to read and to travel. Even just getting outside of the house, but especially getting out of town for a day or two, just to kind of get a breath of fresh air, to get out of your usual context and look at something other than your own four walls for just a little while. I especially find that a road trip is very inspiring to me, as long as I'm not the one driving, because a road trip forces you to just sit. There's nothing really you can do in a car. You can't clean your house. You know, you can't do a whole lot of things in the car except sit and look out the window and breathe and let your brain think. And that's such a nice luxury to have when you get to have it. And I think that can really clear space for creative thinking. So I love a road trip when I'm feeling creatively stuck, just to have that time where there's nothing I can really do except just think and feel and get back in touch with my own senses, because mm-hmm. that's where a lot of my creativity comes from. And that's before you even get to your destination. And then once you get there, you know, you've got new sights, new sounds, new experiences, new people. You can overhear a conversation, or you can, you know, see an advertisement, you know, in a pub or something. Mm-hmm. And you never know what it'll spark. So that's always something I like to do when I'm feeling creatively stuck. And then when I can't travel, which, you know, is a lot of the time, just keeping up with reading outside of work, I find really helps kind of feed the creative side of myself. I tend to take notes while I read, just in case any inspiration comes up or any little spark, an unexpected image or an idea comes out of nowhere, and you're kind of ready to catch it, so that when you do have time to write, you don't come to the page empty-handed. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the blank page is the worst part. Yeah. And so always kind of having those notes ready to go means, you know, I have something that I could stick on the page. And even if it doesn't go anywhere, at least I didn't start with nothing, because sometimes that's the hardest part. So I like to try and keep up with local literary journals and magazines to see what contemporary writers are doing these days. not necessarily to follow any kind of trend or anything like that, because you know yourself, they change as soon as they arrive. By the time you've jumped on, it's too late. But just to kind of see, you know, what are people thinking about right now? What are people writing about right now? And how are they approaching it? What are the new styles? You know, what are the new approaches? You know, and what are the older forms that are still in play? So I keep up with those. I'm looking at a huge stack of them there that we're actually building a new bookshelf to give them a place to live. And again, yeah, I just keep my notes open so that if any ideas come up while I'm reading, I can jot them down and bring them with me. So those are my two go-tos for kind of keeping the creative juices alive.
Fantastic. I fully agree. I think that for a lot of people, kind of having that creative spark is quite daunting, especially, you know, because I know that we're writers and this is what we do day in, day out. But for people that aren't, you know, it can be incredibly daunting. It's like, oh, when am I going to get hit by inspiration? Sometimes, and on a very personal level for me, I have to force myself. I have to force myself to just write every single day. And I remember, I think it was Stephen King. We'll link to his On Writing book in the podcast show notes. But it's literally like, write every day. It doesn't matter if it's absolute crap and needs to get chucked in the bin. It's just good to, it's like a muscle. And if you stop using it, you lose the power of it. So yeah, I think that's good. And reading and watching and listening to a lot of different genres, I think is really important, because it's so easy to stay in your comfort zone of, okay, I love sci-fi. I'm just going to watch sci-fi TV shows and read sci-fi. And then you can really miss out on some great ideas, some great techniques, some great just general approaches, you know. So read widely, various authors, various ages, you know, kind of just, yeah, consume as much content as possible, I guess, to try and get a bit of inspiration. Wonderful. And talking of content and inspiration, what is your favorite content-related resource for anybody that is looking for some help or some inspiration out there?
Good question. I remember when I came to this job, I had very little content experience. I had very little copy experience. As I said, like, a lot of my training and experience was all kind of literary, which is very different. I mean, a lot of the same skills apply, but it is very different. And so I remember when I was training, a lot of our training came from the HubSpot courses. And I found that to be a really solid foundation for kind of getting an understanding of what content is, what copy is, what it's meant to do, and how it goes about doing that. And as an editor, of course, that's really important to know, because how do you know if it works if you don't know what it's trying to do or how it's supposed to work? So I remember really appreciating that as a resource. And it's just got such a wide range of kind of subtopics and different angles that you can come at. So I would say I really enjoyed that for kind of getting a foundational understanding of what content is and how to approach it. And then in the kind of day-to-day run-of-the-mill things, I think I mentioned that I keep an SEO-focused content editor open on the side as I'm editing. And that is such a great resource for, as I'm kind of, you know, reshaping a piece or correcting mistakes or things like that, just to double-check and make sure, now, is that there for SEO purposes? And if so, if it still needs to be smoothed, how can I do that without bringing down the score or interrupting a keyword that's very, very important? Because sometimes they can be a little awkward to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I think having an SEO content editor open beside the actual piece is really, really helpful. And for those who'd like to know, I don't know, do we tell them? Do we tell them which tool we use?
Absolutely.
We use Surfer SEO Content Editor. So I keep that open beside me at all times to make sure that I am not losing any really important keywords while I'm editing.
Absolutely. And I was just about, whenever I'm wrapping up these episodes, we have our quick fire questions. And one of them is, what is your number one tool you'd recommend? Is it Surfer SEO?
I would recommend that for SEO. Yes. Surfer for SEO is what I always use. So I would happily recommend that, I would say. I think I would still recommend Hemingway for readability.
Mm-hmm.
And for writing, I always use Google Docs. It's a simple tool, pretty basic, but that's really all you need. You know, you could technically still do what we do on, you know, pen and paper, but Google Docs is great for both writing and editing. So that's always my go-to writing tool. Even when I'm on my phone, I tend to use a Google Doc instead of just the notes.
Perfect. Yep, absolutely. I think it's so easy to want to invest in like the latest tools and the latest software and stuff. And sometimes the tool is just as good as the person using it, you know, kind of if you keep it as simple as possible and you can focus on the most important part, which for us is the words and for many of our listeners as well. What are you reading at the moment? Doesn't have to be work related.
What am I reading at the moment? I actually just finished something, so I don't have something open at the minute, but I just finished. Oh, I have it here. The latest issue of Poetry Ireland Review, edited by Jessica Traynor, who was the poet in residence when I was at the University of Galway. So I was very lucky to get to work with her. Wow. So it was kind of amazing to get to read a poetry magazine, an edition of a poetry magazine that she edited. So she was responsible for selecting all the poems in the issue. And it's really, I love reading literary magazines and journals because you get such, it's like taking the temperature, taking the pulse of what's going on in writing right now. So there's a lot about grief in there. There's a lot about loss. There's a lot about war. But there is also a lot about just sort of the everyday realities that exist within that broader context, you know, mm-hmm. which is something I really love about creative writers, is that you can have on one page, you know, the massiveness that is an ongoing multi-generational catastrophic war. And on the other hand, you will still have, you know, a fly fell into my breakfast cereal this morning. And these are both real, and they're both mm-hmm. poetry, or they're both stories, and it's all a part of the human experience. And so I really love to read journals for that reason, that you can have this massive scope of the human experience in such a tight space, and it's just an amazing way to take a pulse on. I feel like future historians will study literary collections like these because they hold so much.
Absolutely, yeah, fantastic.
What are you reading right now, Abby?
Well, that is a very good question. I am wrapping up the final couple of chapters of Save Me From the Waves, which is the wonderful Jessica Hepburn. So she is the only woman in the world to have done the to have scaled Everest and swam the English Channel and completed the London Marathon. And she only started exercising in her 40s. So it's quite inspirational. It's quite a funny book as well. And she combines that with her love of Desert Island Discs, which is interviews from the BBC Radio 4 with everybody from kind of microbiologists to kind of Stephen King again, and pop stars and everything in between, of the 8 songs that they'd take with them to a desert island, and then the one book, and what they'd say from the waves. So yes, not as highbrow as literary reviews, but enjoyable nonetheless. And I definitely need to start reading literary journals, I think. I haven't done it since uni. They are fantastic, like you say, temperature gauges of exactly what's going on and kind of what's being created and kind of thought about. Wonderful. Okay. And what is your favorite book of all time?
Oh, geez. Of all time, Abby? That's one thing about me, is that I struggle to pick favorites of just about anything. There's so, especially books, because there's just so much to love. If I had to pick one favorite of all time, oh my gosh. What would I choose? You know, every autumn I reread Maggie Stiefvater's The Scorpio Races.
Mm-hmm.
And I always find something new in it. So that might be the one, just based on how faithfully I reread it every year. Mm-hmm. I might have to go with that. I'm going to be cheeky and say that I also really enjoyed Margaret Atwood's Dearly poetry collection.
Very good.
And this year I read, Sinead Gleason's Hagstone. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Yes, I love that. Absolutely loved it. Fantastic. Really, really good. She's a very talented writer, and it's such a unique story. We're going to link to all of these, by the way, guys, in the podcast notes. So get the old to read pile piled up next to the bed for sure. There's plenty of great recommendations. It's so difficult to choose one. I can never choose one. I always say one when I'm interviewing people, but you know, kind of if people have three or four or five, I'm all for more book recommendations. Wonderful. And our last question of today, what's the best advice you've ever received?
That's a great question. I mean, writing advice or life advice?
Either.
Okay, let's see. For writing advice, I would say the best I ever got was to show, not tell. And that sounds like basic advice. I feel like it's said over and over and over again, but it really, I think of it all the time when I'm writing. And basically, for those who aren't familiar with this advice, it's basically to avoid just telling someone. It's about kind of creating an emotional resonance in the work. So instead of telling the reader this is sad, it's showing them the tears. Mm-hmm. You know, they understand that it's sad because they've shed tears when they're sad, so they get it. You don't have to say, you know, I was lonely. You can just show them an empty room and they will feel lonely. And I feel like the best writing does this. It doesn't just tell, and it kind of doesn't even just show. It conjures the sense in the reader, and it's amazing that as an art form it can do that. And my favorite writing does it so well. There was this great phrase, and I can't remember exactly how it goes or exactly who was meant to have said it, but it was something like, if three writers describe the same car crash, like a journalist will give you the facts, they'll tell you the time of day, they'll tell you the identities of the drivers involved, they'll give you the license plate number. A novelist will maybe describe the weather of the day. They'll tell you what the driver was thinking about right before the crash happened. And a poet will hold up a single shard of broken glass from the windscreen. And it's like, these are such telling ideas about the way different writers approach their writing and what kind of response each one can elicit depending on your approach. So I feel like that's kind of my guiding star whenever I'm writing anything and whenever I'm editing anything. Sometimes even in copy, bringing in that emotional resonance, whether it's a positive feeling or a negative feeling, really makes a difference in connecting with an audience and in getting them to kind of sympathize or empathize with what your message and what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
As for life advice, I would say the best thing I've ever been. It's, I don't know if you're familiar with the Serenity Prayer.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I think especially when there is a lot going on in the world, which there always is. I think we always feel like there's more going on now than ever before. Yeah. And maybe that's true and maybe it's not. But when there is so much going on, we can sometimes feel like there's nothing we can do to control any of it or to make any kind of change. But sometimes we have more power than we think that we do to kind of create the change that we want to make. And so when I get overwhelmed or anxious, or I'm feeling really discouraged about the state of things or just something going on in my own life, I think back on that sentiment and that advice to kind of stand back and think, can I change anything about this? Do I have any control of this situation? If I do, great. What can I do to make this better? Mm-hmm. And if not, okay, how can I accept what's going on without struggling too much against it? Because if there's nothing I can do, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
And how can I cope with this until change can occur? And then I think to follow up with that is just to keep your eye open for that chance to make a change, because just because you can't change something now, just because you don't feel in control now, doesn't mean tomorrow you might get new information and now you have some control now and it could change. So yeah. Don't give up just because there's nothing you can do now.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Thank you so much, lovely Mia. It's always an absolute pleasure to chat with you. And thank you to our wonderful listeners as well. We will be back with another episode soon. Thank you so much. Have a great day, Mia. Thanks, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on this latest episode of the Content Goodies podcast. Thank you to our sponsors, the Content Lab. If you enjoyed this program, please leave us a review. We love to get feedback. And as always, if you need help with any copywriting or content marketing needs, reach out to me at the Content Lab. You will find our contact details at the bottom of the podcast notes. It has been a pleasure. As always, look forward to seeing you on the next episode.